Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM. You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you. And welcome, welcome, welcome. Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon, dear listeners. And welcome to what could potentially be probably one of the best comedic shows without a comedy artist or a comedian technically delivering you one of the best talking points that has been brewing since the 10th of October this month up until today. And the reason why I cite the 10th of October this month up until today is specifically based upon one of the... Well, it's actually, guys, the single most important climate deal that we have not focused on. I call it the single most important climate deal because it's actually the one climate deal that deals with the actual, if I can call it the biosphere or the actual habitat or the actual natural installation on this planet, which we interact a lot with, but we don't care much about. And it has been proven, we don't care much about this particular habitat. We, humanity. We as Namibia, we also have it. And you can even see from the greater engagements by our, whether it be our government and its agencies and its representatives to our private sectors and its representatives and its stakeholders and its particular sort of like proponents, we technically also treat this particular resource, you know, just like a whatever particular entity. Now, the reason why I'm using the term a whatever entity is because you don't see much discussion being championed in this particular entity's, in this particular entity's defense. Now, you'll ask me what particular defense. Well, the defense has been... I'll actually call it, it's a particular defense to the benefit of the specific sectors that operate within it. In Namibia, it had been in the past 10 to 15 years, it technically had been the fishermen, the maritime fishermen, not the fishermen on the rivers, on the river systems of Namibia. I'm talking about the fishermen at the coastlines of Namibia. Because there are large fishing companies that obviously play pivotal economic roles in the fish, in the seaside communities of Namibia. Now, in great length, dear listeners, not much knowledge nor research is being developed about Namibia's biggest resource, which Namibia forgets it has access to. It's a resource more powerful than the diamond resource in this country. It's a resource more powerful than potentially uranium mining. And it's a resource more powerful specifically like many other sectors. But it is a resource which in the coming years up until 2030 and even into the oil and gas sector will play a pivotal role in Namibia's growth trajectory that we are trying to harness. We are trying to capture. We are trying to utilize. We are clearly, you know, dangling at any particular pieces of thought and any particular pieces of thinking with how this particular resource known as maritime resource, this maritime resource or our access to the Atlantic Ocean and its particular systems, and habitat systems. In many cases, guys, we're clutching at straws in terms of grappling and trying to understand how this thing is important and vital to us. Well, I'll start from the most basic particular principle that identifies said particular importance. You've heard multiple times, we've mentioned here on The Home Run, that Namibia is championing being a transport corridor for its landlocked neighbors in SADC. Namibia champions this. It is on record. It is in black and white. You've heard multiple times various transport ministers at various instances, and even the chief executives who are, fall under the line ministry of the Ministry of Transport in that regard, have all stipulated that Namibia's ambition is to become the preferred destination for its landlocked SADC neighbors in terms of, you know, this transport corridor aspect or facility. But what does this transport corridor connect to? It connects to the largest resource on this planet, the ocean. It is a known fact that any country that has a shoreline with a sea, you know, it has a shoreline to an ocean, to a sea, anything bigger than a lake, potentially even, has greater access to international trade than a country that is landlocked and that just has road, rail, and airport infrastructure. Countries that are landlocked versus countries that are not landlocked have a plethora. Okay, the countries that have the shoreline have a plethora of options in terms of trade partnerships that they can access. Countries that are landlocked are unfortunately continuously at a perpetual disadvantage. It is the very reason as to why Botswana visited us back in last month, or at the start of this month, technically with the biannual commission that took place here in Windhoek. And at the heart of that particular discussion, if you've read up on the commission itself that was established by Namibia and Botswana 2 years back in 2023, is that this particular commission's aim was strengthening and progressing or advancing trade negotiations and trade agreements between Namibia and Botswana. Why? Because Botswana sees a clear benefit to having access to Namibia's transport corridor initiative or policy and particular national project. And this allows potentially Botswana to try and negotiate various particular, you know, preferential agreements to help its economic endeavors. Now, remember, guys, in many cases, a country like Botswana, which is a landlocked country, and I'm sorry, guys, fellow Namibian Botswana, you know, Namibians, if you, I don't know what the name is for someone from Botswana. So if you see me mumbling over that particular term, it's not out of, you know, naivety. It's just clearly you don't speak much of someone from Botswana to technically say South African, Namibian, Zambian, Zimbabwean. It's just, is it a Botswanan or is it something else? Is the term something else? So anyway, I feel your pain, guys. However, the pain is now something that is being transmitted to a country like Namibia, who is now directly aligned with European Union interests in terms of achieving or setting a global green shipping initiative for international trade. Now, I'm not here to talk once again. I'll give you a refresher course or an update or a software update on Europe's particular Global Gateway Initiative, which speaks to it's the European Green Deal, and the European Green Deal is tied to the Samoa Agreement. Remember those three tags, just like that. They tag into each other like that. You get the Global Gateway Initiative. The Global Gateway Initiative is a means by which Europe is advancing the just energy transition discussion that factors into Europe's particular Green Deal. Or it's vice versa. The Green Deal sets up the Global Gateway Initiative. The Global Gateway Initiative gives you access or a channeling avenue to the Samoa Agreement, which is the particular Global South Initiative, but it only selects the Caribbean, Africa, and the Pacific Islands areas. In terms of being in this particular developmental roadmap. Now remember, many of these particular countries in these particular zones are least developed countries, but many of these particular countries have massive shorelines or massive access points to maritime facilities, infrastructure, potential trade routes, and connecting harbor points across the world. The Caribbean is known for being pristine and being one of the world's most precious holiday destinations. Whether you're going to Antigua and Trinidad and Tobago, to Barbados itself, to the Bahamas, to Jamaica, unfortunately, which just now got washed down by that particular hurricane Melissa. Whether you're going to St. Kitts and Nevis, doesn't matter which part of the Caribbean. It can even include Cuba, for that matter. It can include even Haiti or the Dominican Republic, for that matter, who share the same island known as Hispaniola. Historically, that was the particular name that the Spanish had for that island, which is shared by Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Haiti speaks French on one half. Dominican Republic speaks Spanish on the other half. And voila, there you go. Their border consists of just a bunch of trees, you know, spanning the width from side to side of the island. But anyway, to coming to the African continent, where you've got a whole bunch of countries that have access points in terms of to the ocean and to the various or the historical naval trade routes or maritime trade routes. Because if I use the word naval, it implies military. And if I use maritime, it technically designates the civilian friendly notion. But usually maritime trade was predominantly naval. You know, they had a lot of guns associated to the trade exercise. But before that, we take a quick ad break. Kapena onda do, ya fa onda do ya shoprite. Oteli pakamo, okupetera enda do dipedu. Kai pumbi wa ai she ngashi. E khrama dilo mafera tano do mutayo rama ye presenta omiro ngaya ri toma ti kedora. Omiro ngaya ya ri esenda. Omiro ngwe no ngwe kese imwe. No shoyo. E kiro khrama dilo longo. Dosu kai triana yo king brown sugar. Kedora. E fera no miro ngama no ngwe esenda. Omiro ngwe no ngwe ashike ino futa shi dipe. Onda do ya shoprite. Enda do edi. Odino ngushu fio matu ngwe ya November. Odura oyo tei. Oko shoprite akuke. Kara o programa yo gacha ready steady cook. Ko One Africa TV. Otoye tero no mapanduro. Ko shoprite Namibia.
Coming back there from that ad break right there, dear listeners, you're on your number one talk radio station, and this is the home run for your Thursday edition. So the comedy show in itself obviously starts off with a lovely bang. And if you've ever been observant in terms of how things have been developing in the global north, meaning everything above the equator, not like us who are below the equator, the clear-cut scenario is obviously a discussion based upon, what has been the latest particular developments in terms of this discussion, Dwight, of green shipping. The discussion is green shipping. Well, putting the EU aside and citing specifically what has been going on for this whole month of October, is that literally you've got to jump back to April. In April of 2025, the member nations of the International Maritime Organization, yes, there is a UN agency that governs the Earth's largest habitat or largest ecosystem, the IMO. In April, the countries agreed on the particular details of a global agreement regarding international shipping, international energy for the shipping lanes and the trade routes, specifically on the sea, high seas, as well as also defining the particular ways and penalties and taxation mechanisms that would determine how all countries on this world or all countries on the planet would be interacting with this new particular legislation, which would have been the very first international green legislation, a green shipping or green transportation legislation that would have been rolled out. It would have been the first starting point. Things were going very well. Things were on course from April this year up until October. Things were just A-OK. They were pristine. I'm this close to doing an impersonation of Donald Trump, you know, going, everything was okay, and everybody was smiling, and people just looking good. But anyway. sorry, guys. I'm sorry. You know, because if you've been, you know, doing the literature research and the other particular aspects of research that I've been doing regarding this particular subject matter, you technically just been laughing for the sake of laughing. Well, the comedy is pure, it is unfiltered, and it's definitely of a mind-boggling position. Well, things obviously start off from one particular discussion. Now, the IMO is a pretty old organization. The IMO's particular mandate was supposedly achieved in 1960, but it actually was an agency that was established in 1948. And it was established at a particular international conference in Geneva because three years prior to that, obviously you had a whole bunch of countries that were bombing each other to smithereens on the high seas, which had been a particular picture that had been problematic prior to 1948. I mean, you had the pirates, the likes of Blackbeard, Edward Teach Blackbeard, what's that lady's name? Anne Bonny, and a whole bunch of other particular weird pirates. I'm not talking about Treasure Island pirates, which are technically, you know, fictitious characters. So systems were not fair, or they weren't, okay, the word fair is a pretty broad and very vague term. So systems regarding governance and operations and legislation and various other things regarding how countries interact with each other on the high seas. So the high seas, you would clearly define them as sometimes international waters, because you've got something like national waters and international waters. And if you've been observing what the US has been doing with Venezuela, with that particular positioning of the American fleet, outside of the national waters of Venezuela, and they keep shooting at supposed speedboats that supposedly have drug runners on them or drug smugglers on them. The discussion becomes problematic because the shooting or the sinking of those particular vessels happens in international waters. Now, international waters, guys, is a tricky game. International waters is a game of fair game, meaning if you've got a country, let's say Namibia has an enemy. If you've got a country who doesn't like anything Namibia is doing, and Namibia now tries to play the diplomatic position, and Namibia gets accused, just like Venezuela is being accused of supposedly being, the heartland of drug cartel smuggling into the United States and other parts of North America, whereas the problem is a lot bigger because America has a major problem with its border with Mexico. I'm not going to get into the politics of who says Trump is right and who says, the Mexican presidents, the current and previous, are right. The discussion is that America does face a major problem, specifically in that America and Europe, they are the particular destinations for all narcotics smuggling across the world. For everything. The literature, the resources are for free on the internet, guys. There are major documentaries that cite, for example, digressing from our main point. The international airports in Europe, they flag anything. The international airports and the international harbors of Europe, they flag anything as suspicious that is a agricultural product that comes from South America. Why do I say this? Well, they've realized that the same cartels, the drug cartels in South America, literally use the containers that the banana farmers or the cocoa farmers or the cacao farmers or the, what other particular product do they also ship in a major container from, And you can name all the other particular agricultural produce that you can potentially think about coming from South America that is now destined for Europe and through the major ports of entry. So we're talking about Rotterdam, the harbor of the port facility of Rotterdam that Namibia has an MOU with, the Frankfurt airport, the Antwerp airport, or is it the Brussels airport? No, it's the Antwerp airport. No, it's not. But it's a whole bunch of other facilities and the likes. And they would find in a shipment, for example, of bananas, behind the bananas would be packed to the front here where the door is. So obviously when you open up the door, you'd be seeing bananas just from the eye of, just from,
just from looking at it just in its bare bones capacity. But what many of the particular immigration and anti-drug fighting agencies of Europe and North America have said is that specifically sometimes the shipment is hidden behind the agricultural produce. Now, they've become so suspicious, Europe and America, of all agricultural products being shipped to Europe, is that they search every single shipment coming from South America because it is potentially connected to a drug smuggling syndicate or exercise. Now, you obviously sit with that particular nugget of information and knowledge now that I dispersed now with you. You can thank me later. Flip that particular subject matter to what has been happening with Venezuela and the United States now currently in the global scheme of things. And obviously, there's only one side of the discussion that's popping up. Obviously, the Colombian president has been pretty vocal since the UN General Assembly 80, which was in last month up until today. I haven't seen much about what Maduro has been saying, but there's an accusation specifically that Maduro is somehow a beneficiary of a, I don't know if it's a fictitious cartel that supposedly runs out of Venezuela, but still staying on the high seas discussion. Now, the American Navy is shooting down these speedboats in international waters. International waters, if you have a country that has a beef with another country, international waters is open season. It is fair game. No, literally, guys, it is fair game. If a Namibian trade ship is, you know, being politicized, let's say, somewhere at a UN level. Yeah, this cargo ship operating out of the port of Walvis Bay is potentially, you know, smuggling humans. Let's say there's this whole particular campaign that's going about that. Let's say Namibia is smuggling, is a participant to international human smuggling syndicates, and that they are operating through Namibia. Obviously, that has been proven in recent years, obviously. But let's say it elevates to a different level. And the elevation level is one to whereby they're now making use of sea routes, you know, maritime routes, and they're operating through a port facility. This is just a hypothetical picture, please, guys. Don't go and say it is a fact. I'm just giving you a little bit of a fairy tale right here. Sketching the scene for you. Now that cargo ship goes out, and this cargo ship is something owned by a Namibian shipping company, and the cargo ship is cited at a UN level as being problematic, and one country that has a beef with us decides, you know what, I'll take the honorable decision and the route and the position of sinking that cargo ship so as to make a statement to Namibia about human trafficking and what consequences can be met. The ship gets sunk. Lives get lost. And there's nothing that could be done because the ship was in international waters. So now, when I give you that particular position, maritime treaties are difficult to navigate because you have traditional maritime powers. Just like you've got nuclear powers, just like you've got oil powers, just like you've got literally military powers, maritime laws are difficult because the guys who have set the scene, the tone, the legislation are the same guys who've gone to two world wars, have waged war across the world, and unfortunately have caused countless times of destruction. I'll say it again. Countless times of destruction. With the particular objective that the IMO is obviously trying to achieve. Because the IMO is now obviously trying to be this particular beacon of, shining beacon of some sort of light in its own particular right. The downside is things went a little bit weird on 10 October. Now, why do I say 10 October and why do I say weird? Well, here's the statement that comes through from the White House press secretary.
This was particularly written out of the, this is the office of the spokesperson of the U.S. Department of State. So the U.S. Department of State, guys, is literally the prime minister's office in our, you know, in our thinking. And this was a statement that came out on 10 October 2025 that cited taking action to defend America from the UN's first global tax, global carbon tax, the IMO's net zero framework. Now, the net zero framework is built on the, what's the thing's name? The various climate change agreements from COP, from the Conference of Parties on Climate Change. Now, the Conference of Parties of Climate Change have to obviously still take place this year. And this particular agency of the UN, the IMO, was trying to achieve its own particular goals or targets in its particular way and in its particular right. This statement that pops up on 10 October. Yay, this thing makes for poetic reading, I'm telling you guys. This particular statement, which was a joint statement signed by the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, the Secretary of Energy, Wright, and the Secretary of Transportation, Duffy, of the United States, where all of them have said, and it goes as follows. President Trump has made it clear that the U.S. will not accept any international environmental agreement that unduly or unfairly burdens the United States or harms the interests of the American people. So, obviously, since the engagements technically took place 2 weeks back, next week, members of the IMO will vote on the adoption of a so-called NZF aimed at reducing global carbon dioxide gas emissions from international shipping sector. Before we continue, guys, let's take a short ad break.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vinduk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vinduk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vinduk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
So, the poetic reading and the poetic literature that stems from this is obviously a clear statement and a clear reiteration of 20 January this year was when Donald Trump was inaugurated. And on day one, Donald Trump signed an executive order saying he will withdraw the United States from the United Nations, which is a weird thing to do since the United Nations is based where? In the United States. Literally in the financial capital of that country, New York City. So it makes things problematic. And then there obviously was the other particular rumor that with the United Nations General Assembly 80 that happened back in last month, September, supposedly because of the potential withdrawal fears that the United States was trying to enact, the UN General Assembly would have to be moved supposedly to Geneva. It was a clear piece of mis and disinformation. I tried following that thing up, I tried fact-checking it. I tried seeing if there was any basis or any reality to that particular piece of information that was being supposedly shared online. And it was in many of these other particular countries in Europe and in North America, their particular media places that were peddling a major untruth. And I don't like using the word truth because truth is a subjective mechanism. Meaning my truth, I could feel very strong about my reality and you could feel very strong about your reality. Which is technically the whole aim of what politics is based upon. He or she who can shout the loudest is ultimately, you know, they are just being the kings and queens of their own particular little castles at that time. Now, if you look at this particular statement, John Wright, obviously it speaks true to the particular ambition or the goal that the United States wishes to achieve by citing and stating that an international body cannot impose legislation on them. Which has been the same thing that has happened before with the International Court of Justice or the ICC, the International Criminal Court, one of the two, who had also started looking into American
American actions in Afghanistan and Iraq. And then the same president in his first term went and said and stated, yeah, we will just put sanctions on you. And during his particular term, it was his own particular Central Intelligence Agency director, that the chief guy that they had there, who was planning on a way of, what was the thing? planning a particular event in terms of storming The Hague. Also known in Dutch or in Afrikaans as Den Haag, which is where the Dutch king lives in the Netherlands. A country which is a NATO member and a fellow NATO ally to the United States. Which has become in recent, the NATO organization, its own right, has also become a particular problematic entity in recent years because of the Ukraine conflict primarily. Because it was NATO technically egging Ukraine on in terms of its particular approaches with Russia. Yes, I had to take you once again there to Tsumkwe. No, I need to use a new town. Let's go for Kamanyap. Yeah, I took you to but Kamanyap is also in Kunene. So I've got to stay away from Kunene now. Okay, let's just say I took you to Aus, or Rospina for that matter. You've got to see the particular picture here, guys, because once again, if someone doesn't like something building up, a last minute effort is being done, which is a strategic ploy in order to derail the spirit of a mechanism. Now, the net zero framework for the International Maritime Organization is a particular approach or a particular mechanism which aims to tackle international shipping and its energy sources. So what happened on 7 to 11 April in this year, when the Marine Environment Protection Committee, which is the committee that is, it's a subcommittee or sub-body under the International Maritime Organization, the IMO's particular MEPC, that's the Marine Environment Protection Committee, their ambition was about sorting out the where which T must be crossed and which I must be dotted and which particular development must take place. But the meeting, and this is a little bit of a problematic thing as well, is that the meeting was chaired by a Dr. Harry Conway from Liberia here in Africa. If you don't know, they are Africans with, you know, upright English names, and most of them come there from Ghana and Liberia. And by another gentleman who was the vice chair to this particular committee, a Mr. Han Chiang Tan from Singapore. Now, the 83rd committee meeting of the MEPC was a particular platform that follows from a 19th meeting of Intersessional Working Group on Reduction of Greenhouse Gas Emissions from ships. You guys should see the level of abbreviations here. It's like literally sitting with encryption and decryption codes that you have to work through and remember. And that particular Intersessional Working Group meeting itself met on 31 March to 1 April this year. So they met before 7 April. So as to know, okay, guys, this is the things we're going to discuss in the MEPC meeting. Just know this. And when that particular engagement took place, it was also the first particular meeting of this particular intersessional working group, which was the Intersessional Working Group on Air Pollution and Energy Efficiency, who then met between 2 and 4 April. So two meetings had to take place at the same time, in order to achieve the particular level by which the Marine Environment Protection Committee of the International Maritime Organization needed to engage countries or member states in October of this year. So they needed things to happen in April in order for them to engage in October. So obviously things were being said there. The major highlights from that April meeting was tackling climate change, which is about midterm issues to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from international shipping approved. So this was approved, tackling greenhouse gas emissions from international shipping. But it was mid-term measures, meaning looking at things in a medium-term scenario. Now, when you say, or when you speak about medium-term, long-term, short-term, in a year, specifically in referencing a year or a time frame of a year, you're talking about short-term being a month to 3 months, medium-term being 3 months to 6 months, and long-term being anything past 6 months, up to 2 years, or infinity. Because the particular frameworks were things about, okay, so how do we play our part? Because every year, and I bet you my last 5 cents on my name, by the end of November, we will see the same repetition of the same unhappy countries, regions on the planet, who will be annoyed specifically with the developments that come out of the United Nations Conference of Parties negotiations phase after the heads of state fly away. Remember, it's a 2 week event. After the heads of state fly away, the heads of state are the guys that show up first. They sit there, they go stand in that plenary, make their speeches. Everyone claps hands, go like, "Yay, nice, nice! Look at look! Our leaders are also there. They're participating. You know, things are looking good. Things are looking up for Namibia and stuff like that." And then the negotiations have to take place. And remember, guys, here on the Home Run, we mentioned it last year twice, because our former Minister of Environment, that being former Minister Shifeta, had to attend two Conference of Party events in the same month. He had to go to the COP29, which is the annual Conference of Parties climate change event, and he had to go to the Conference of Parties on Desertification, which was held in Saudi Arabia. Now, at both events, he reiterated, technically you could have also said he probably had, you know, he tweaked a few words in the one speech, so as that it doesn't look like he showed up with the same speech at the other event as well. But clearly, the one was desertification, the other was combating desertification, which is an event that takes place every 2 years, and the other one was based upon a discussion of the annual discussions of climate change. Just last night, I attended a climate change discussion, and just yesterday morning, I attended a particular disaster risk engagement based upon climate change, the unpredictability of climate change. So now you sit with all that load of context and information, because all these things are interconnected. Yes, the agencies, the parties, the organizations, the participants are organizations. Many of them are pretty big, with multiple levels of directorates. You can call them directorates or departments, with each having a particular different specialization from their sister partner or brother partner, which brother department. Sorry, guys, not brother partner. Brother department or sister department. each one obviously having their own particular focus and niche approach, but they all technically speak to the same big goal. We are all aiming for the big plan. So now the big plan is the climate change. You break things up, obviously. You've got guys in livestock, guys in mining, guys in renewable energy. You've got guys in, other energy sources. Let's call them alternative energy sources. You've got guys dealing with the dependence on fossil fuels. You've got guys in transportation. You've got guys in aviation. And you've got guys in maritime. And then there's also the guys in food production, security, housing, all those other things. The list goes on. The maritime guys, which is this IMO guy discussion, are crucial because the Earth's surface is covered by more than 70% of water, fresh and seawater included. The downside about talking about aviation, because aviation is also one of the biggest contributors to the climate change discussion, has been that Africa as a continent has a very low participatory rate in aviation development, research, and participation. Technically, the people that can only fly, if you're a foreigner or a tourist, which is a foreigner in many cases, or if you are the peoples that love their S&Ts very much and they love getting those lovely stamps in their passports wherever they go across the world from Namibia. But that's also a major minority. And then there's a major minority discussion also in the world of maritime. Because we Namibians, despite having a pretty big coastline for a country, we have almost zero participation in naval developments. I'll say it again. Zero participation in naval developments. One of the loveliest things was a particular engagement of, not last year. Yeah, it was last year. It was last year. The climate change, another climate change workshop I had to attend that was organized by GIZ at the coast. And the guy that showed up there is a veteran, environmentalist himself here in Namibia, an environmental consultant as well. He consults a lot also for the Namibian government. And he explained, he was the guy that told me, and I asked him, where did you see that particular resource, that statistic about Namibia's sardine stock being non-existent because of what the South Africans did in terms of to our sardine resource? Was it sardine? No, it's the sardine. Yeah, or is it the pilchard? No, it's the sardine stock. That the South Africans literally depleted our sardine stock. Now, the sardine stock gets depleted by a way that the fish don't trust us humans anymore because they view that their breeding ground has now become a threat. We take an ad break right after this.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
With either a non-alcoholic Heineken, Savannah, Vintook Original, or Vintook Lemon, let's cheers to connecting, to moments shared and good vibes, anytime, anywhere. Grab one of our great tasting non-alcoholic beers or ciders. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Yes, dear listeners, enjoy responsibly. Just like the particular comedy show that I've been trying to contain for the good part of this particular session of the home run. And obviously, you're still with me here on your number one talk radio station, specifically Eagle FM. And this is your home run here on this lovely Thursday. Although the lovely part of this Thursday is actually me greatly, you know, over accommodating how this Thursday has been treating me. Because, you know, I've been hoping for the lovely cool wind that has been here in the capital for the past 4 days. Up until today, it decided to become lovely and humid. However, before we continue, dear listeners, just to let you guys know, there is no participation in Ramadan. You can call through at 083-288-401. Let's have a listen what your particular views, perspectives are, and ideally, how you see the particular developments actually becoming a major talking point, and specifically how it gets aligned in Namibia's particular pathway to its nationally determined contributions being maintained. Now, if you don't know what our NDCs are, once again, I love repeating this, is that our NDCs were a commitment document that we submitted at the UN, the UNFCCC, which is the UN, United Nations Forum on Climate Change, Countries for Climate Change, and it's a binding document. It's not a binding document like an agreement, but it's a binding document to say, hey, listen, you set these targets for yourself. You've got to make sure you live by these targets. But keep this in mind, ne? Namibia and Botswana are countries that are already on the extreme spectrum when it comes to climatic conditions and other particular affiliated developments in climatic scenarios or particular developments that stem from weather anomalies and the likes. Remember this. It is well documented because it is South African scientists, mind you, that documented this about us. And it's found on a very lovely particular internet resource known as the IPCCC. Yeah, the IPCCC. It's the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. They contain all that particular knowledge there about Southern Africa's particular weird position. It's us Southern Africa, so it's us, Botswana, and parts of South Africa, Australia, and parts of South America. We fall under the same particular spectrum. Same particular spectrum in that regard. So now getting you back to what the comedy show of the IMO. Well, the IMO, they were trying to be serious. Don't worry, they were trying to be serious. But the comedy show is obviously what stemmed from the 10 October statement that the United States issued. So back in April, the things that were agreed upon were try to find a midterm measure to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from international shipping. That was the number one particular agreed upon or approved climate change position that the IMO had to reach under its MEPC, the Marine Environmental Protection Committee. Secondly, they reviewed the short-term greenhouse gas reduction measures, which was at a phase one level, and that was completed. They then had the opportunity of reviewing the annual report, the annual carbon intensity and energy efficiency of the fleet report. They then had the opportunity of looking at the onboard carbon capture and storage and other energy efficiency matters, information that was laid in front of this particular committee. They also then had the opportunity of approving the marine plastic litter action plan. This was approved. Because if you guys don't know, in the marine ecosystems of the world, which is primarily the whole oceans and seas of the world, there are major floating plastic islands which are problematic. And I've cited this before, that I follow a particular international NGO agency who has hired fishing trawlers to collect these plastic islands out of the oceans. And these things are big. Some of these things are as big as a small island. And they literally just float between major trade lanes, major sea trade lanes between the continents. Between the continents. Now the worst thing is also you have literally, urban zones and human settlements, which are pretty large in many cases, around the world, who are positioned right next to the shorelines, meaning they live on the shoreline right next to, right where they can see the sea and access the ocean resources. Many of them are obviously fishing communities. Many of them have obviously become large, you know, thriving trade settlements, for example, major trade settlements like, let's take London for that instance in terms of the European context. You've got the city of Rotterdam as well. London and Rotterdam share similarities in that they are built on a river mouth, on the mouth of a river, but the mouth of the river is pretty far from the, where the river literally flows into the sea. So into the English Channel, the distance that London literally is from the English Channel is a pretty significant distance, because I think it's like a 5 to 10 kilometer distance or a 20 kilometer distance. And you can see the same thing with the port city of Rotterdam as well. You obviously also get, but Rotterdam is a lot closer in that scenario. They obviously also have the port city of Amsterdam, the Dutch as well, which is also literally close to, you know, the Atlantic Ocean. You fly any part of around the world, besides Africa for that matter. I want to make a particular point as well, because you get cities like Goa in India, which is an ancient maritime trading hub. India, a country that has a billion plus people. Obviously, the population in that city will be above 1 million people. And just think yourself in, what is the level of potential pollution that all those inhabitants in that city are literally dumping into the sea, into the ocean. I remember once one of my older brothers who visited the eastern coast of Africa here, Tanzania, Mozambique, Tanzania upwards. When he came back, he came and told us, obviously, at that stage, and I'm talking about year 2010, 2009, it's just in that same zone when the Darfur conflict kicked off for the first time in Sudan, before South Sudan split literally from Sudan. Remember, Sudan was Africa's largest country by surface area. And when that civil war occurred between the major warlords that find themselves now at the head of government in South Sudan against Omar al-Bashir from Sudan, the military leader of Sudan, before he was also now thrown into jail, and then these two new generals started this fighting over who would be in charge of Sudan. The discussion there was, okay, you know, obviously you're looking at the geopolitical situation there in the Sudan area, because Sudan borders onto Kenya, borders onto Egypt, borders onto, who's the other country? I think it's Uganda. And there's this particular problematic situation that can pop up. Now, as my brother would travel up that eastern coast of Africa, because from Tanzania, you can jump into Kenya or you can jump into Uganda. When he came back, he told us literally, the beaches are so beautiful in that part of the continent. Guys, I still need to tell you, if you ever need to travel somewhere, don't travel to Europe. Go see this continent. Go see this continent. It is beautiful. And if you've got the chance, drive through it. Don't fly. If you get a better chance, try to take a train. Just look after your belongings, ne? Just look after your belongings. Hey. If you think the asset forfeiture guys in Namibia are something, hey, people have Spider-Man senses in the rest of the continent. Don't worry. Things will disappear. So, he explained literally that the natural beauty of Eastern Africa is just, it's unrivaled. It's beautiful stuff. But then he says, you go to what would look like the best, the most ideal tourist setting, and then you see the pollution. You see the pollution. You see the levels of these wastewater facilities that we've got here in Windhoek, for example. You know, all the household wastewater, the wastewater from your toilet, from your kitchen, from whatever you do in your yard, that flows through the drainage system. You know, the man-made drain system which is known as your sewage system, that flows to the reticulation or whatever water treatment plants that City of Windhoek have here. Imagine that that wastewater flows into the sea, on the beach, flows into the sea. The pipe flows into the sea. Which has been the literal thing that if you go to the UK, you will find the same thing. You will find that their river systems, the animal life, meaning the fish species that used to live there, don't live there anymore. Because those European populations have been living on the rivers for so long. They've been doing everything on those rivers for so long. Just think yourself in a city like London, has been there since the Roman period, because London was a Roman installation. They've been there. So that city is potentially 1,000 years old. Go think yourself about a city like Rome that also has a river that runs through it. Rome's literal name or nickname is the Eternal City. Go ask yourself why. It's been there forever. You go to France, Paris, the River Seine that runs through Paris. Paris is also a pretty old human settlement.
besides the Asian settlements that I've just cited, like Goa and, you know, others that you would find in India as well and other parts of Asia as well. Oh my goodness, guys. It is impossible to try and explain it by words because you'll have to see the picture yourself. In many cases, many European rivers don't have any fish species anymore. It's either been killed off by various kinds of, you know, if we can call it sort of like things happening in their freshwater resources, or firstly, it was a combination of factors. They overfished in the river and they were busy polluting the river. And remember, in Asia and in Europe, river systems are literally like road network systems. Road network systems and river systems connect human settlements, that's now cities and towns, with trade. They connect it with trade. Now you can ask me, Dwight, okay, we were talking about the sea, but it's a water. It's a water source. It's a particular strategic source because it's a resource that speaks to what land-based animals and, you know, entities on land like us humans need. We need fresh water. When you come to trade, much of the trade did begin on the river systems. Even if you can go listen to the stories in the Tukavango regions, in the Kunene region, and there's an aspect in terms of someone, you know, orally telling you that, hey, listen, African communities on those rivers traded with each other by, you know, riding down the river on their canoes and boats. I mean, the Prime Minister Ngurare yesterday explained a discussion of one part in the north of Namibia that always gets flooded by that specific flood waters that flow in from Zambia and from Angola. And there's a particular position, there's a particular area in, I don't know if it's one of the, which one of the regions, but he mentioned the towns or the settlement's particular location, which is not in the Tukavango regions. He stated specifically that every year they face the same challenge because the communities that live in that vicinity of Namibia, they don't know that they need canoes at one specific point in the year and just for that particular point in the year. However, where he, the Prime Minister, comes from and from other parts, even like in the Zambezi region, is that it's an ordinary thing, the canoe or transport by the waterway or transport by a water system, or knowing that this water feature is a central part to ecosystem life, animal, human, bird, insect, you name it, reptilian, because the crocodiles are there, but a crocodile is technically not a reptile, guys. It's a living dinosaur. If you don't know, if you think I'm lying, a crocodile is a dinosaur. It's the last dinosaur still left on the planet. A crocodile. A rhinoceros is one of the oldest mammals because they don't know if it actually came out of the same period that the dinosaurs were still alive. But besides that little biology lesson there, the essence at the heart of this talk was, look at the role that water plays. Your body is 70%, more than 70% of water. There is not a 50%, there's not a 60%. All scientists will tell you, all medical scientists will tell you, your body consists of more than 70% water. More than 70% water. That means your joints and your physical skeleton. Now, the joints have cartilage on it, which is a somewhat lubricated soft bone. If you don't know what cartilage is. But think of it as a hardened piece of human anatomy. Those potentially are the only three things, the only two things that are made of
a solid that is not liquid. Think about that. Just think about that picture. When you get back to the talking points that we were citing here, it is obvious and it is literally not even a no-brainer. Well, it is a no-brainer, technically. Not a no-brainer. It is a no-brainer. So you don't even have to think far. You have to tackle issues around the high seas, the oceans, the coastlines of countries and the likes. The reason why I mentioned to you that particular exposure that my brother had back in the 20-teens, 2010, 2009-ish area, just when the Darfur conflict popped up, and when he got exposed to what East Africa literally looked like and its shoreline with the Indian Ocean, is that primarily it gives you a wake-up call in terms of the very, very small things on the ground that we still as Africans have to achieve. Now, I'm not saying that we in Namibia are literally connecting our sewage pipes and infrastructure to the river systems like they do in the UK. Yes, I'll reference the UK because it's a first world nation. A supposed superpower that commits water pollution in 2025. Technically, they did that last year and they did that in 2023. If you did not know, and you'll find this still on the internet, is that many people were complaining, especially the coastal towns in the UK, about how they could no longer swim at their local beaches because a waterworks company, a water company, I don't know what a water company is, but a water company, which is a private sector company, had decided to pump slurry and contaminated sewage water into the English Channel, and they have it at various points. It was like at four major points, and where they've pumped that polluted water into the ocean is literally 20 kilometers away along the shoreline, along the coastline, from the closest seaside resort town. You know, think of a Swakopmund, but it's a seaside resort with tourists visiting there a lot every year. The one lady that lived in that town, and that was interviewed at that time, she could no longer go and swim because she did not know what's in the water. She did not know. Now, you don't know what chemicals are being pumped in such an instance into the water systems or into an ocean. And it makes things problematic because the problematic aspect of this scenario is a discussion based upon if you have a country like the UK who's got private sector operators, and I'm not even talking about shipping. This is countries with land-based operations and economic actors literally being a problem to the ocean systems and ocean ecosystems in the modern day era. Literally dumping and polluting the ocean. You don't know what chemicals they're pumping in. You don't know what level of, whether it's biodegradable or non-biodegradable materials. And you also don't know whether or not this is actually the best practice. Because just across from the UK is Ireland behind it to the west, and France in front of it to the east. Now, that whole rubbish can end up on the shorelines of France, or on Spain, or on Morocco, or on Mauritania, or on the Gambia, or on what's the country below Gambia? The other Guinea. There are almost three Guineas in Africa, and one Guinea in Asia, or in Oceania. All that whole shoreline, if you look at that surface area, that's a good more than 10,000 kilometers of shoreline that can be polluted just from one waterworks company in the UK. Obviously, The current systems in the world are pretty sophisticated. They are pretty independent in many cases. And even though it has been proven, it'll take one droplet of water in the ocean to circumnavigate the Earth. I think it's like a year and spare change months or weeks. Even though you've got that lovely statistic that was calculated by, you know, scientists. The startling thing is, think about what that one droplet can do. Now convert that droplet into a polluted droplet by the actions that, let's say, one country like the United Kingdom does or takes. And the United Kingdom is not even the biggest issues. The biggest issue comes from Asia. Countries like Indonesia, Malaysia, the Philippines, the guys in the South China Sea, like Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam. There's another country I'm forgetting. And once again, factor in. Okay, not China. I mean that cluster of countries that are just above Asia, just above Australia, and just below China, which includes India and Bangladesh and Sri Lanka as well. All those guys have for been thousands of years been shipping, trading, and moving between each other's islands. Now I'm going to ask you guys, try to think to yourself, what level of pollution and contamination has taken place in the sea, in the seas, and the sea lanes between those countries? Specifically Malaysia, Indonesia, the Philippines, and Thailand. Yeah, Thailand. Specifically those four countries. I don't know, but it's ugly. The addressing of the marine plastic litter plan, action plan, was an essential thing because it also includes penalties. Now, as you heard from the statement that I quoted you from the American State Department, was that the fear is clear and is literally clear and bold in that it states, imposing an international taxation mechanism on member states to the IMO. Now, obviously, the Americans are citing that they unequivocally reject this proposal by the IMO in the context that it is a potential mechanism that it aims to increase costs to their citizens, their energy providers, their shipping companies, their customers, and their tourists. Well, the Americans have technically lost most of their tourists already. Just go look on the internet what has happened to New York. All the border towns that are opposite the Canadian border, because there was a major tourism market specifically in America's sports economy. Many Canadians were sports fanatics. Now they don't fly there anymore. So tourism, don't worry about the tourism thing. That is just, that you can even see it was basically an afterthought in terms of how far it even is. Because literally the sentence initially ended at, and their customers. Or tourists. Huh? How do you have an afterthought after ending your sentence? Now they noted here that the perceived economic impacts for the United States from this measure could be disastrous, with some effects or some estimates forecasting global shipping costs increasing as much as 10% or more. And they say, this is their statement, we ask you to join us in rejecting the adoption of the net zero framework by the International Maritime Organization at the October meeting and to work together on our collective economic and energy security. So, with that being said, and specifically with that being highlighted, the net zero discussions will now commence in April. No, February next year. No. Yeah, April next year. Primarily because people started throwing their toys around.
They started throwing the toys around. The countries just had 3 days, which is technically 4 days. They just had 4 days to meet, to engage, and to basically agree on the principle to this international document. This international particular document was going to be one of the most clear-cut highlights, primarily whereby the world would say yes. The world would say, okay, everything's good. We're good to go. Let's do this. We've got all the T's crossed, all the I's dotted. Everybody seems to be in consensus, and people were in consensus in April of this year. Consensus had been achieved. Now, consensus does not mean it's an agreement. Consensus just means it's like ratification, that other weird word. Man. Ratification, which speaks towards, yeah, I agree in principle to your idea. I don't agree to your idea, but I agree to the principle of your idea. I know it gets confusing. Now, when you agree in principle to an idea, you're saying, okay, it sounds good. It sounds nice. Let me go think about it. Then people go think about it. Organizations or multilateral organizations, literally like the IMO, go like, okay, it seems like people are okay-ish. We'll just continue as is. But before that, ad break.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vinduk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vinduk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vinduk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste that gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
So we come back to listeners. Once again, you're on the home run here with me, Dwight, specifically as we ride a lovely, a lovely particular eventful October's developments in climate change talking points and discussions. And yes, you're in our company, specifically in your drive time session, as you're obviously making your daily commute or wherever to kick it up. Enjoy and just have a little bit of a rest while obviously being tuned in to us and listening to the insightful discussions that we always bring you. Now, as things are obviously where we left off before the break, speak towards reconvening in next year, meaning we'll get back to the same drawing board we thought we had completed in April of this year. We'll come back next year. But 12 months from October speaks literally to October next year. And this is primarily because the United States opened up a whole can of worms. Now, apparently, Saudi Arabia saw a chance. Saudi Arabia brought in a vote on a specific point of this particular agreement. This particular vote was then also backed up by guess who? America and Russia. Nochal. Surprising. Surprising. And Russia, the country that is known for having the world's largest coastline. Yes, it does have the world's largest coastline, although a large portion of it literally is connected to the North Pole, that coastline. It does make things look a little bit weird. Because remember, at the start of our talk here, these are the same guys who participated in one of the worst chapters of human history, who literally were operating on the high seas as a do or die ethos,
Yeah. If you were a small nation in the 1920s or the 1930s and the 1940s even, whoever's worship could have sunk you just for the fun of it. Because they'll tell you, because we can. We can do it. What do you want to do? They'll even ask you in Afrikaans, wat wil jy maak? That was the level at which the high seas was a problematic scenario. Look, you can still see a guy on the surface of the land, you know, on the surface of, you know, on land. You can see someone from far. Have you guys ever tried spotting someone on the sea? A boat. And usually it's something like out of your eye shot distance. And obviously you know that people don't see each other easily in the air when they fly, because that is a highly regulated space. And there, the world has actually reached unanimous consensus by saying, you know what, we don't mess around with airplanes. We don't mess around with airplanes. It's a no-go. It is the most holiest of transport systems on this planet. Never mess with an airport. Never mess with an airplane. Don't think about it. Just don't. But when it comes to the maritime sector, suddenly language just escapes everybody. In many cases, logical thinking avoids everybody's mental capacities. And in some instances, you even get like weird alliances popping up. You go like, hey, what's going on here? Now, one particular thing that the head of the IMO, what's this gentleman's name? Secretary General Arsenio Dominguez. There was one particular part of his speech on the 14th of October, literally 4 days later after the US State Department's media release. He said, and he told the member nations there at that event, quote, some of you are of the view that there will be not sufficient alternative fuels available to ensure compliance, while others believe that robust global regulations will send a clear demand signal to fuel and energy producers. Some of you would have preferred a stronger commitment to supporting developing states. And others would prefer additional support for early movers. Now you can obviously see what are the various camps that obviously formed here. The guys that are worried about, is there enough fuel resource to get green shipping going? Now at the heart, it seems that it's just the European template, the EU template, that so far is the one that stands. The reason why I say it's so far the one that stands is because I just found out literally on my way into the studio getting here that our Namport CEO participated in a discussion with one of the green hydrogen proponents of the Namibia's green hydrogen program regarding a green shipping and, you know, docking. They call it bunkering. But let's just use the term docking for now, you know, to make things easier for our understanding. You know, some of us don't live at the coastline. Now, when it comes to such particular discussions, you can obviously see how the European Union is literally roping in Namibia to be on its particular agenda. Now, Namibia is not a baby of the EU. Namibia is a baby of the UN. If this particular agreement was signed, Namibia would have had a lot of headaches to firstly cope with, because there might have been stipulations in this agreement, this global agreement, that Namibia would have to go and renegotiate or find its particular position. And secondly, the particular EU discussion
that Namibia is part of, which is the, literally the Samoa Agreement, which is literally the Global Gateway Initiative, and which is literally the European Green Deal, would be one particular template that would face specific, I'll call it annoyances, not irritations, not challenges, but annoyances. Now, the EU loves saying that Namibia, that the EU is Namibia's largest trade partner. The EU is not a country. I'll say that again. The European Union is not a country. The European Union is a bloc of nations, a collective of nations. Those nations still have their independent leaders, and they still have their independent constitutions, and they still have their independent agencies, institutions, and the likes. They still have all their fabrics of their societies. When you sit with that particular template and understand, okay, Namibia's largest trade partners are countries like South Africa and China. The EU is not a country. It's a bloc. When you break up all that trade and trade, you know, analysis, yeah, then the things, the statistics look pretty small per country. They look pretty small. Sending beef to Norway, sending fish to Spain, sending that to Germany, sending that to France. And then it sits with a weird picture. Now, before we continue, guys, we're going to take a short ad break and come back right after this. Vavitcha University, where the 2026 applications are now open for the Faculty of Law, Commerce, and Education for the programs Diploma in Legal Studies for Level 6, Bachelor of Laws Honours, Bachelor of Science and Project Management Honours, Bachelor of Supply Chain Management Honours, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honours for Math and Science for the grades 4 to 7, and Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honours for Math and Science for the grades 8 to 12. Application fee is $230 Namibian. Application deadline is 30 November 2025. For more information, please call 061-225-463. Or 061-225-462. Vavitcha University, where everyone is an achiever. Namibia, are you ready to win big? Coca-Cola is giving away up to $1 million Namibian in prizes every week. One lucky winner walks away with $10,000 cash. All you have to do is grab your favorite Coke, Fanta, Sprite, Stony, or Twist in 2 liters, 1.25 liters, or 600 ml bottles. Look under the yellow cap, dial *142*45845 # punch in your code, follow the prompts to enter, and just like that, you could be our next big winner. Refresh, enjoy, and win with Coca-Cola. T's and C's apply. Go to our social media pages to watch the video on how to enter the competition. Leaving us with just about 4 minutes to our particular talking point, dear listeners. The comedy show was... Well, I'm not talking about the comedy show of the home run. The comedy show in terms of the negotiations with the IMO was literally, it was something out of, it's not even Shakespeare, because Shakespeare is predominantly known for having comedies and having drama. No? Comedies and having, it's not a drama, what's the other one's name? The sad thing. But the comedic sense of this scenario was, it was poetic in its core. There were clear-cut divisions that were put up. There were clear-cut positions being taken up. For example, everyone knew about the American position because it came through from their president at the start of this year in January, on January 20, or 20 January. But by April after January, everyone had thought maybe the Americans would soften and maybe they would come to the table and say, hey guys, let's look at this thing properly. One of the major things cited by the Secretary General of the IMO, Mr. Dominguez, was that the priorities and the concerns have been duly considered in the final design of the IMO Net Zero Framework. Now, this final design of this IMO Net Zero Framework
was approved at the last session. The framework had been approved. Now the same framework is being postponed by 12 months so that new draft additions can be made. Meaning the draft document was finalized. It was agreed upon. Now the thing has to be changed again so that by next year, October, they can probably, you know, someone then throws up a stink and then goes like, I refuse to agree to this thing. But then everyone says, but you already signed here, bro. Look here. Here's your signature. It says Dwight there. It says Dwight right there. Why are you refusing something that we can see you signed in black and white? You agreed upon it. You were collated. You were collected. You were counted in this vote by saying you agreed. You were on the yay side. You were not on the nay side. You didn't even abstain. You were on the yay side of things. Now, obviously, in the realm of international countries and their bilateral agreements and discussions and interactions with each other, things get weird, very clearly. In many cases, they're even a sideshow to the actual development. Because just look at what has recently happened in this month, or in this week, sorry, in this week specifically regarding Trump and President Xi Jinping's engagement in this week, is that now supposedly the guys are all chummy. They're all buddies. They're even chilling together, you know? Like best mates hanging out. Just having a blast. Ad break right after this.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
With either a non-alcoholic Heineken, Savannah, Vintook Original or Vintook Lemon. Let's cheers to connecting. To moments shared and good vibes, anytime, anywhere. Grab one of our great tasting non-alcoholic beers or ciders. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you. So coming back from that lovely beat there of our particular promo, that's the Home Run promo, guys. I'm sorry for bragging a little bit, but yeah. We still have some spare change time left, obviously through the graciousness of David. You've got obviously be looking at a particular talking point that cites that it seems like negotiations between countries are not always clear cut. And when it comes to multilateral, entities like the IMO, like the United Nations, like the World Health Organization, like the IMF and the World Bank, we obviously know who are the guys that don't like the IMF and the World Bank, because that's everyone else in the developing world. That's all of us. That's 80% of the world's population does not like two entities that literally are aligned with the other 20% of the world's population. Literally. However, when it comes to entities, for example, that really try to play a part in their particular facets or spheres of influence regarding the actual facilities that empower international trade, as well as also helps to connect economies across the world, then suddenly it's the rest of the developed countries who have the loudest voices. Why I say who have the loudest voices? Like I said, recently NamPower's CEO attended a particular presentation alongside one of the proponents of Namibia's green hydrogen developments in terms of presenting the aspects of the green hydrogen developments in shipping, as well as also in the I don't know why they love using that word bunkering, but it actually speaks to the infrastructure on land, not infrastructure in the sea. Now, when you look at what Dominguez cited specifically was that sufficient alternative fuels were a problem or were a subject matter of problem. The European Union has been greatly developing green hydrogen or hydrogen-based engines. The Port of Rotterdam has given this particular promotion aspect already last year in its own, on that river. What's that river's name? The Rhine River. The River Rhine, yeah. On the River Rhine, they showcased, there was a specific Dutch company, a Dutch shipping company, that showcased a hydrogen engine. That comes from the same proponent that's here in Namibia that presented yesterday alongside Namport's CEO at, it didn't happen in Namibia. Apparently it happened outside of Namibia. And it was based upon green hydrogen fuels or green hydrogen as a fuel for green shipping. So the European Union is doing their thing. The European Union is championing itself, and obviously they are literally head, you know, focused and staying on this particular course of developing this green fuel of hydrogen for green shipping, because they want to be an industry leader. Now, on our talk yesterday, guys, I cited to you, Africa is known for three things, or Africa is known for two crucial things: cheap labor and cheap resources. But you can break resources up into two. So it's cheap labor, cheap minerals, cheap land. In that order. They know that the Namibian dollar is an inferior currency. Don't worry, guys, I have major pride in my country and major pride in the Namibian dollar. I have major pride. There's just nothing I can do if we don't have factories that add more value to the Namibian dollar. There's nothing I can do. There's nothing a lot of you can do listening now, right now, to us here on Eagle FM about that position as well. There's nothing you can do. You could try something, but if many of you probably did not finish high school, there's also, you know, it just compounds the issue that much more. And if a lot of you don't have jobs to add more value to the Namibian dollar, that just is another compounding level to it, which once again gives the particular factual depiction that countries like Namibia on the African continent and in the developing world are known for those three stereotypes: cheap labor, cheap land, and cheap minerals. On the aspect of global regulations, the EU is probably the market leader internationally about that. There, they are the market leader. The Global Gateway Initiative has already identified the various legislation that the EU has already passed, which includes the Critical Rare Minerals Act and various other particular acts regarding the green transition that the European Union zone is making, alongside countries like Namibia, who are part of their development and adjustment and transition phases. And obviously, and pretty clearly, South Africa was also no part of the thing. If you guys have ever followed, South Africa recently signed a 12 billion euro agreement with the EU, which accounts to, I think, like a 230 to 240 billion rand project. Or, you know, it's the green transitioning thing now. That's the level of financing that South Africa's economy is going to get. Now, Namibia would never have seen that kind of money. Guess what we got on day one of the very first green hydrogen conference that took place at Country Club in 2022? Guess, guys. Guess what was the first buy-in factor there? It was $1 billion. I think it was 50 million or 300 million euros, something of that sort. Close to $1 billion, if you times 20. You know, whichever one you're looking at, whichever tally. because there were various pledges happening that time, that specific phase. Oh yes, the 300 million was the aggregated amount by a specific period in 2023. Yeah, yeah, now I'm remembering. But the first pledge that was made there at that first Green Hydrogen conference that took place at Country Club was of 50 million euros. It was a 15 million, 50 million, 50. South Africa is getting 12 billion euros, not 50 million. Not 50 million euros, not 50 million Namibian dollars, not 50 million US dollars. South Africa is getting 12 billion euros. It makes things interesting because South Africa's coastline is larger than ours. South Africa has more port cities than us. We only have two. We are planning a third one, but there's no clear-cut or concrete literature anywhere that I can find about Cape Freer. There's nothing I can find. And if I try finding it, it ends in a dead end. At a T-junction. It ends in a cul-de-sac. A T-junction is still a street because it still flows from both directions in front of you. It ends in a cul-de-sac. We call it a doodloopstraat. Now, what can we do with cul-de-sacs? Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. However, the aim here is something that when we've got to look at the net zero framework for green shipping, Namibia is being roped in into the European developments because obviously we have now aligned ourselves pretty solidly and pretty clearly with everything EU. And discussions that come out from the IMO would automatically give a entity like the EU a natural voting or a voting power in this discussion because they already have the Caribbean, the whole of Africa and the Oceania areas and Pacific Island areas in their back pocket in terms of this is how much countries of the global south we support in green transitioning. So we believe green hydrogen must be on the agenda of the International Maritime Organization's green shipping agenda, and it should meet the particular needs of this majority of the nations around the world. Doesn't matter how many population is found in each. Because I'll tell you now, two countries dominate at least 50% of the world. Two countries. And on that note, dear listeners, it does bring us up to the end for this evening's discussion of the home run. It's been a blast. Obviously, these particular developments about the comedies of the international realm of negotiations, international relations, developments from multilateral organizations and such, you know, they're fascinating stuff. But on that note, guys, let's catch each other again. Same time, same place tomorrow on the home run. On Monday, definitely, Captain Divundu will be back. That's now Helmut. And obviously he'll be able to sort of like, tell us where he actually went and hid or, you know, hid himself in terms of this last week. On that note, guys, enjoy the rest of your evening and accompany and stay tuned for the business and economic segment right after the break.